This is a Tadad podcast.
Welcome to Tadad's podcast. I am Mariana Reyes from the Fiscal Affairs Department of the International Monetary Fund. In today's episode, we talk with Dr. Jose Andres Romero, General Director of the Colombian Tax and Customs Directorate, also known as DIAN, who will share with us the recent transformations in the institution and his experience with the first 100% virtual TADAT evaluation, led by the Fiscal Affairs Department of the International Monetary Fund, and which included the participation of several international organizations. Welcome.
A special greeting to you and the entire International Monetary Fund team. It's a pleasure for me to be with you and share the experience.
We know that during the last 2 years, the DIAN of Colombia has carried out some reforms within the organization. What have been the strategic pillars on which the management of the entity has been based during the last 2 years?
Well, first of all, Mariana, it must be said that when you're going to carry out a change management process within any organization, not only within the National Tax and Customs Administration, you must, without a doubt, establish a process to ascertain that change management really can be done. So what did we do? First, we conducted a diagnosis, a clear definition of the problem. After that diagnosis, we did it from the ground up, from the people who were within the entity, but also with a lot of review of the different sectors, from the different stakeholders in the DM, both taxpayers and officials, as well as public entities, to know what the possible solutions were. Normally, this knowledge is available. Then we developed a detailed work plan to manage change and strategic planning of the entity. A detailed schedule, and we moved step by step to the tasks or activities, and then to the strategies. We began to implement those strategies, and then we made an evaluation, that is, let's say, the normal thing when one makes a whole process of change management. And then what we established was that we re-evaluated the mission and vision of the entity. From there, we started to move from an entity that normally is in charge of managing the compliance and collection of taxes and tax obligations to an entity that is now dedicated to facilitating and guaranteeing the understanding of and simplifying the compliance of tax and duties. So look at how that change of mission is very important, and also the change of vision. What we want as an entity, which makes a lot of transformations and the management of change, is to be recognized as an innovative organization and as a reference for the state and also for the region in terms of tax administration. An entity such as DIAN, which not only administers tax but also the customs, has to become an entity of state-of-the-art technologies. And this is something fundamental. That is why we established four strategic objectives. The first, transformation of the human resource, because it is the base. The management of change is built with people, the human resource, changing and working on people. That has to be the basis of any change management. Then we talked about the technological transformation, which is the whole process of modernization, where we have supported financially that process within the DIAN. The modernization process is self-financed, and it is the main investment project that the country can implement. The third pillar, proximity to the citizen, is fundamental. That change of culture, that change of mindset, is from the mission of the entity. The DIAN's functions are no longer to be authoritarian, to impose charges, but to facilitate and be close to the citizen and to provide a service. And finally, that of legitimacy and sustainability, which is to improve efficiency and management, the fight against evasion and smuggling, and to achieve better collections for greater fiscal sustainability of the country, but with efficiency.
Thank you for outlining the details of the modernization process being carried out within the DIAN. You are counting on financing from the Inter-American Development Bank. How do you plan to use the resources?
Yes, indeed. This has been quite a process. When you look at the different components of the DN background, the main component, really the most important component, the one that carries 77.1% is the technology issue. In the theme of transformation of the human component, in the preparation of the tenders, we have begun to advance in these 2.5 years. Why? Because there is no point in starting to invest in technology if you don't have the right human resources. And against this background, the DN investment is mainly in the areas of technology, infrastructure, and improvement in tax and customs control and compliance.
Very interesting what is coming up for the National Customs Tax Directorate. One of the objectives is the transformation of the human talent of the entity. What work has been done, and what are the results in the transformation and professionalism of human talent?
Well, progress has been very important in the area of human resource transformation, which is the main pillar. For example, the career plan. We made a career plan adopted and justified only for the DN. And it is a career plan where personal performance is established and rewarded. Group performance, obviously, but also personal performance, so that people who have better performance have greater opportunities to grow within management positions, within the coordination of groups, and so on. And this is something, therefore, very important. In addition, the evaluation here will be with objective parameters of qualification, because totally regulated, so that, in effect, it can identify who are the extraordinary people and who are the people who require greater support to strengthen their career. In addition, we recruited 2,000 new employees. At DN, we found that 40% of the payroll were pre-pensioners. This means that in a few years, they were going to leave the entity. Then we needed to put new blood into the institution and select them very well, by meritocracy. The best qualified from the universities, the best profiles, the best qualifications, and professionals to really have a base of technological growth within the entity. And that has helped a lot to generate change management. We staff enrolled into a diploma with the Universidad Javeriana de Transformación Ética. We have already 1,500 officials of the DN, of the Diploma of Transformation of the Human Being, particularly from the ethical point of view. What we need to do is to recover the DN. It is also that the good ones are more, but the good ones cannot be passive. The good ones have to realise that being ethical, being transparent, and fighting corruption is something that touches us all. And as a leader within the entity, we have to be able to radiate that approach in our work teams. For now, there are 1,500 graduates. The idea is to multiply that to 3,000, and that they in turn can replicate this theme of ethical transparency, of ethical leadership within the entity. In addition, we were rated by Great Place to Work on the career track and had a very satisfactory rating. This means that the human resource is now prepared for the transformation to grow, so that now, when we invest the $250 million in technology, people will be open and willing to engage in this great technological change to the entity.
Focusing more on the technological issue, how has the experience with Cloud First been?
This is a very important question, and I would like to divide the answer in two. The first thing is that we already have a digital strategy, and it is the main guarantee that we will really achieve a technological transformation. First of all, if we didn't have a digital strategy, we wouldn't have any direction. On the subject of Cloud First, we have first made a pilot that I think shows this investment of $250 million will work and is the pilot of electronic invoicing. So, what did we do? An international call for tenders in which we were shown who had experience in electronic invoicing, and the supplier with the most experience in electronic invoicing was the one we were going to hire. And that is what we did. We awarded the contract in November 2018. We started working in December 2018 and January and February 2019. In March 2019, we already had the first pilots agreed. We worked in March, April and May on testing. In May and July, we released the first pilot application. And in July, we launched the electronic invoice because electronic invoicing was an important decision that worked on from the beginning in the cloud, 100% in the cloud. And that experience led us to be able to have, after a year, because we completed in July, 1 year, August, September, October, November, 4 more months, 1 year and 4 months to have a coverage of 93% of the entire economy. 93% of the entire economy, that is 420,000 companies already invoicing electronically and 80,000 more registered and about to invoice. We're going to reach 500,000 companies, which is almost the same as all the companies in the country. In parallel, we are moving forward with electronic invoicing analytics. With the analytical programs and the results, the benefits and results of the fight against evasion and smuggling using electronic invoicing are already being seen. This is because we started to use electronic invoicing in parallel with generating analytical data and big data. So, notice that there we demonstrated in a small laboratory, first, that if it is possible to make them execute the modernizations of the technological transformations. Second, that we have to go to the cloud and that the cloud gives us competitive advantages, especially in the area of analytical management and in the area of unlimited capacity in terms of data management. Thirdly, that somehow the electronic invoicing process will permeate the whole organization and will permeate all the artificial intelligence and that it has a direct relationship with the collection.
Thank you very much for sharing the experience with electronic invoicing. In the midst of the COVID-19 crisis, what has been DIAN's strategy to address the situation in Colombia?
I would like to say that the strategy revolves around two pillars. The first is to be very clear that if we bankrupt the companies, we will not have anyone to charge taxes to. That is the first principle. And the second principle, which is also very important, is that it is fundamental to take care of the culture of payment of the Colombians. And around that, we generated a series of measures designed to improve the liquidity of companies. For example, we removed the obligation to pay rent advances to companies, to SMEs, and to those companies and companies most affected by the crisis. That is, companies that were even billing more, since they do not need this type of aid. In addition, we generated abbreviated returns for them. We established the refunds, the abbreviated payment facilities. It means that we told people to listen, present their statement, put their case, and we make a payment agreement so that with a bank interest, you can pay your obligation in the next 12 months by installments without affecting the liquidity of the company. Additionally, we implemented the VAT refund for the sectors 1, 2, and 3. The poorest people in Colombia were refunded all the VAT they spent. We moved the payment terms, for example, to all the SMEs, so that instead of paying in April, they would pay in December the taxes in such a way that there would be time to reopen the economy. We established VAT and excise tax exclusions and exemptions for the most affected sectors: the tourism sector, the restaurant sector, the bar sector, the health sector, the medical sector.
In July 2020, at the height of the pandemic, DIAN conducted the TADAT assessment led by the International Monetary Fund with the participation of the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, and the Inter-American Center of Tax Administrations. What was the motivation for this assessment?
Well, I think the first thing that is very important because to comment here is that TADAT undoubtedly gives us some elements of evaluation. It is a snapshot at a time in the history of the country. Obviously, we are evaluating it to 2019. So first, I think TADAT gives us tools to realize that if we are in the right direction in the process of transforming the entity. In addition, because undoubtedly in the diagnostic process, it helps us to identify some fields that eventually we had on the radar, but that we did not have on the radar taking into account the best world practices. To the extent that the radar is built from world best practices, knowing that in some things our paradigm was to do a certain thing or to do it in a certain way. But in TADAT, makes us realize that it can be done even better in some circumstances. I think that also gives us a very important element, and obviously it fares very well. It is very timely having that diagnostic picture before starting the large investments in technological modernization, because it helps us to have a starting point that we will later evaluate once we make the investments and also take into account those process changes in all those adjustments that we have to make precisely for the new system, and to take into account those best international practices.
Colombia was the first country to receive the 100% virtual assessment. What was the experience like?
Obviously, the issue of making it 100% digital created some very big challenges, both for the International Monetary Fund and for us. It has some advantages in terms of availability, quick access, being able to make it more inclusive, because, as I said, there are 113 offices throughout the country. It has even helped me a lot to have meetings with all the branches, much more often, because now we have them all virtually. This is an advantage, because sometimes the human contact, the sharing of experiences in many things, sometimes that helps to make the diagnosis much less cold. So there are points for and against. But I would like to give a very special thanks to the facilitators, because in reality, this is a new job and it's difficult. As a facilitator, one is always used to seeing the person, feeling sensations, knowing what the reactions are, and being able to advance a process in a virtual way, because it has advantages. Obviously, one can do it much more widely, be in more regions of the country, etc. But it also has difficulties, especially for the facilitators. And I think it was a great effort as well. I think that it is important to recognise the management directors, the deputy directors, because from the beginning we said, listen, we have to stop here and realise that this evaluation is a really important evaluation that we have to take very seriously and use it. But I think the important thing here is the openness that the team had and the outlook. We had the training and then we moved forward with the process. It was very good. I think it was good. As I say, having that starting point to eventually have another evaluation or follow up on those observation points in 2 years is a very important tool to make sure that a transformation process or modernization is successful. So I think it was very timely, just beginning the process of major investments. And obviously the idea is to continue from here to follow up on the issue.
Thanks to the director, José Andrés Romero, for accepting our invitation and for sharing his experience and reflections on the TADAT tool with our audience. It was a pleasure to have you for our episode today. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode. We hope you will join us for our next episode.
The TADAT podcast is available free of charge. The views expressed in the TADAT podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent those of the International Monetary Fund or the IMF policy. Materials from the podcast may be reproduced with proper attribution. Comments and correspondence may be emailed to podcast@tadat.org. TADAT is a collaborative undertaking of the following partners: the European Union, France, Germany, the International Monetary Fund, Japan, the Netherlands, Norway, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the World Bank.